Hello, hello, hello. Here's Malanka with another episode from Sri Aurobindo's Synthesis of Yoga. Certain general lines have to be formed, which may help to guide the thought and practice of the sadhaka. But these must take as much as possible the form of general truths, general statements of principle, the most powerful broad directions of effort and development, rather than a fixed system which has to be followed as a routine. All shastra is the outcome of past experience and a help to future experience. It is an aid and a partial guide. It puts up signposts, gives the names of the main roads, and the already explored directions, so that the traveler may know whither and by what paths he is proceeding. Now the rest depends on personal effort and experience and the power of the guide. The development of the experience, in its first rapidity, its amplitude, the intensity and power of its results, depends primarily in the beginning of the path and long after on the aspiration and personal effort of the sadhaka. The process of yoga is a turning of the human soul from the egoistic state of consciousness absorbed in the outward appearances and attractions of things to a higher state in which the transcendent and universal can pour itself into the individual and transform. The first determining element of the siddhi is, therefore, the intensity of the turning, the force which directs the soul inward. The power of aspiration of the heart, the force of the will, the concentration of the mind, the perseverance and determination of the applied energy are the measure of that intensity. The ideal sadhaka should be able to say, in the biblical phrase, "My zeal for the Lord has eaten me up." It is this zeal for the Lord, uchaha, the zeal of the whole nature for its divine results, vyakulata, the heart's eagerness for the attainment of the divine, that devours the ego and breaks up the limitations of its petty and narrow mold for the full and wide reception of that which it seeks, that which, being universal, exceeds and, being transcendent, surpasses even the largest and highest individual self and nature. But this is only one side of the force that works for perfection. The process of the integral yoga has three stages, not indeed sharply distinguished or separate, but in a certain measure successive. There must be first the effort towards at least an initial and enabling self-transcendence and contact with the divine. Next, the reception of that which transcends, that with which we have gained communion into ourselves for the transformation of our whole conscious being. And last, thirdly, the utilization of our transformed humanity as a divine center in the world. So long as contact with the divine is not in some considerable degree established, so long as there is not some measure of sustained identity, Sayujya, the element of personal effort must normally predominate. But in proportion, as this contact establishes itself, the sadhaka must become conscious that a force other than his own, a force transcending his egoistic endeavor and capacity, is at work in him. And to this power, he learns progressively to submit himself and delivers up to it the charge of his yoga. In the end, his own will and force become one with the higher power. He merges them in the divine will and its transcendent and universal force. He finds it, thenceforward, presiding over the necessary transformation of his mental, vital, and physical being with an impartial wisdom and provident effectivity of which the eager and interested ego is not capable. It is when this identification and this self-merging are complete that the divine center in the world is ready, purified, liberated, plastic, illumined. It can begin to serve as a means for the direct action of a supreme power in the larger yoga of humanity or superhumanity, of the earth's spiritual progression, its transformation. Always, indeed, it is the higher power that acts. Our sense of personal effort and aspiration comes from the attempt of the egoistic mind to identify itself in a wrong and imperfect way with the workings of the divine force. It persists in applying to experience, on a supernormal plane, the ordinary terms of mentality which it applies to its normal experiences in the world. In the world, we act with the sense of egoism. We claim the universal forces that work in us as our own. We claim as the effect of our personal will, wisdom, force, virtue, the selective, formative, progressive action of the transcendent in this frame of mind, life, and body. Enlightenment brings to us the knowledge that the ego is only an instrument. We begin to perceive and feel that these things are our own in the sense that they belong to our supreme and integral self, one with the transcendent and not to the instrumental ego. Our limitations and distortions are our contribution to the working. The true power in it is the divine's. When the human ego realizes that its will is a tool, its wisdom, ignorance, and childishness, its power, an infant's groping, its virtue, a pretentious impurity, and learns to trust itself to that which transcends it, that is its salvation. The apparent freedom and self-assertion of our personal being to which we are so profoundly attached conceal a most pitiable subjection to a thousand suggestions, impulsions, forces which we have made extraneous to our little person. Our ego, boasting of freedom, is at every moment the slave, the toy and puppet of countless beings, powers, forces, influences in universal nature. The self-abnegation of the ego in the divine is its self-fulfillment. Its surrender to that which transcends it is its liberation from bonds and limits and its perfect freedom. But still, in the practical development, each of the three stages has its necessity and utility and must be given its time, its place. It will not do, it cannot be safe or effective to begin with the last and highest alone. And it would not be the right course either to leap prematurely from one to another. For even if from the beginning we recognize in mind and heart the Supreme, there are elements of the nature which long prevent the recognition from becoming realization. But without realization, our mental belief cannot become a dynamic reality. it is still only a figure of knowledge, not a living truth, an idea, not yet a power. And even if realization has begun, it may be dangerous to imagine or to assume too soon that we are all together in the hands of the Supreme or are acting as his instrument. That assumption may introduce a calamitous falsity. It may produce a helpless inertia or magnifying the movements of the ego with the divine name. It may disastrously distort and ruin the whole course of the yoga. There is a period, more or less prolonged, of internal effort and struggle, in which the individual will has to reject the darkness and distortions of the lower nature and to put itself resolutely or vehemently on the side of the divine light. The mental energies, the heart's emotions, the vital desires, the very physical being have to be compelled into the right attitude or trained to admit an answer to the right influences. It is only then, only when this has been truly done, that the surrender of the lower to the higher can be effected, because the sacrifice has become acceptable. The personal will of the sadhaka has first to seize on the egoistic energies and turn them towards the light and the right. Once turned, he has still to train them to recognize that always, always to accept, always to follow that. Progressing, he learns, still using the personal will, personal effort, personal energies, to employ them as representatives of the higher power and in conscious obedience to the higher influence. Now, progressing yet farther, his will, effort, energy become no longer personal and separate, but activities of that higher power and influence at work in the individual. But there is still a sort of gulf or distance which necessitates an obscure process of transit, not always accurate, sometimes even very distorting, between the divine origin and the emerging human current. At the end of the process, with the progressive disappearance of egoism and impurity and ignorance, this last separation is removed, and all in the individual becomes the divine working. Well, that seems like a good place to stop for this reading. Sri Aurobindo, The Synthesis of Yoga. We shall continue next week, another episode where we left off. And we thank you so much for tuning in and hope that light pierces all darkness for the highest good of all concerned. Bye for now.
This is Auroville Radio, voices from the city of Dome.